This is 98.1 FM, Raglan Community Radio, Irirangi or Whaingaroa. Hello, kia ora, my name is Jason, I teach holistic health and healing, and welcome to Your Health, Your Choice, a show that guides you on your healing journey, helping you choose your own healing path. And today, to help us on that path, I have from the other side of the world, or the other side of the Pacific Rim, Mr. Vinny Todorich. Vinny, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jason, this is great.
Thanks for being on. It's a blessing to have you on the show. I've listened to you and your co-host Anna for 10 years now on your podcast, and it's been educational, entertaining, and weird at times, but funny all the time and great. Now, you've got many hats. Personal trainer, speaker, author, filmmaker, food manufacturer, podcaster. But the one thing I want to start off with is your cancer story.
Yeah, wear that hat too.
Yeah. I gave your book to my dad in 2015. He got diagnosed with multiple myeloma, and I gave him your audiobook. I still don't know if he's listened to it, but I know he's no longer adding sugar to his teas. But do you want to share that story there? Maybe that's how you got into all these other hats, is from that cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, some of it. As a matter of fact, I feel like I'm going through cancer again. One of my brothers, he's in his mid-50s. He's battling cancer right now. And I'm on the phone with him every day. You know, from the beginning, I was like, okay, when you start taking chemo, this is going to happen. That's going to happen. You're going to start feeling like this. Don't get ahead of yourself. I know you feel good today. Tomorrow, you might not feel so well. You know, so I'm reliving chemo. You know, as I always say, and I think I said it in my book, cancer doesn't hurt. Chemo hurts. Chemo is what knocks you out. You know, so I feel like I'm going through it all again right now. And so it is a sobering thing because just like me, he's got a pretty bad round of what he's going through. And so far, knock on wood, looks like he's beating it. I just hope it keeps moving in that direction. But man, it really does bring me back to 2007. And just so that your audience is aware, I didn't start my health journey in 2007. I was shocked in 2007 to learn I had cancer because I spent my whole life being healthy, right? I walked into a gym before my 10th birthday because I was this nerdy kid, and there was a guy down the street who had a gym in his garage, and I just walked in, and just since I didn't have many outside friends, I just hung out with these older guys who taught me how to do things, how to lift heavy things, and that led to becoming a good athlete in high school. And, you know, I always say you got to dance with the date you showed up with. So my body did well for me. So I just kept going with that. I had a college scholarship to play athletics, football, American football in college. And then I got a degree in exercise physiology and nutrition. And, you know, so all of that just kept going on in my life, which shocked me when I woke up one day and the doctor was like, hey, you have a leukemia, and not just any amount of leukemia, you're going to die soon if you don't get chemo. So it was like that, you know? So yeah, that was the beginning of me looking at everything. And at the time, I ate a lot of red meat and I ate a lot of chicken and fish, a lot of protein, because that's how you keep muscle about your body. But I was also an ultra cyclist. So I was eating tons of rice and pasta, especially in the season, right before big, long rides. I mean, sometimes on Saturday, I would spend 15, 16, 17 hours on a bike. So naturally, I was going to have big pasta feeds the day before, right? And when cancer was over with, I really started to do a deep dive. And that's when I figured out, wait a minute, I've used, keeping people away from sugar and grains, I've used that in my career to keep them lean and healthy, yet I didn't do that to myself. I was eating rice and all of the stuff that goes around athletics. I was eating, Gatorade type electrolytes, and I would use tons of goo. I don't know if people know, it's like a gel made of sugar. It's just like cake icing in a Mylar package. I was doing all of that because when you need energy on the bike, you don't want to stop and have a steak. You want to just keep riding and squirt something into your mouth and keep going. So that was the protocol I took. And it turns out that protocol is probably what almost killed me.
Is that where you came to the to find no sugars, no grains, which is a diet a lot of people follow because of your work?
Yeah, well, I was doing it with my clients. You know, I was in Hollywood and I worked with a lot of actors and actresses. And the idea was, hey, you need to be lean on screen, right? And I was the guy. I was one of those guys, one of those celebrity trainers. And so in order to keep people lean, I would simply not let them eat sugars and grains. And when this was back in 07, you know, I talked to my doctor, right when I was getting, you know, it looked like I was going to be healed. And I said, look, you know, what do I do to stay healthy? And she said, your leukemia is going to be back within 5 years. And I said, well, you know, all my friends in Hollywood are telling me I need to start juicing and have a lot of, you know, fruit juice and vegetable juice. And I should be eating. One person told me I should have 10 to 12 ounces of wheatgrass per day. Mm-hmm. And just the logistics of that, I was like, well, wheatgrass is expensive. And I had tried it before. And I don't know if you've ever tried this, Jason, but you have 1 ounce of wheatgrass, you're going to be burping that stuff for the next 5 hours. I couldn't imagine having 8 to 12 ounces of lawn clippings per day in the form of a juice.
Yeah.
Not only that, it's expensive. So I would have to grow it myself and cultivate it myself. So I asked my doctor, I said, look, is there, you know, she was a, you know, this research oncologist. And I said, is there any truth behind wheatgrass and, you know, being a vegan? And she goes, no, as a matter of fact, just the opposite may be true. We're seeing that cancer is a closed cell and it doesn't really feed on oxygen. It feeds on carbohydrates. It feeds on sugar. So the fewer carbohydrates you have, the longer you may go before you're back on chemo again. Now, Jason, we had that conversation in 2007. It's 2023 when we're recording this. I've had exactly zero chemo in all of that time. And no one's studying me. They told me emphatically, within 5 years, you're going to be back on chemo. But here I am, no cancer. Let's see, 7 from 23 is what? That's 15, 16 years, right? Something like that?
Yeah, 16.
So, yeah. So that's crazy. But no one's looking at me and going, what's he doing different? Or is he just an anomaly or anything? No one's studying that, but it's keeping me healthy. And along the way, I decided to take my, you know, they say, take it to the streets, right? You know, podcasts were brand new. I had written a book. I needed a way to sell that book. I started doing a podcast 11 years ago. That's where you found me. And, you know, we're still doing it today. We've done well over 2,300, coming up on 2,400 episodes. And I originally started doing this, honestly, just to sell my book. I did not have any noble intentions. Mm-hmm. I wanted to sell a book. I actually thought I would do like 5 or 6 podcasts and they would just live on the internet forever. I didn't know how it worked. I didn't know that you had to keep doing them. But the book came out and the book was a big hit. People started losing weight. Cancer patients started calling me and crying and saying, oh my God, you saved my life. It's like, I didn't do anything. Mm. I just wrote a book. I didn't, you know, and people would write to the podcast, you saved my life. I've lost 200 pounds, 300 pounds. People are losing crazy amounts of weight. So when that kind of happened, when that started happening, you look around and you say to yourself, I can't stop doing this now. I've created this animal and I have to keep this going. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a calling. Some would say you're courageous when you're, you know, standing up to bullies, but sometimes it's not courage that's doing it. It's just, you feel called to, it's just something that's the right thing to do. And I think you're being called to do this.
Yeah. You know, I don't understand really what callings mean. People ask me all the time, do you feel that cancer changed your life or any of that? And, you know, I'm not very religious. I'm an atheist, but my wife always says, you're the most spiritual atheist I know. Hmm. You know, I don't feel a calling to do this. But I think part of my own religion in myself is that we're not on this planet alone. You know, we're not here to help us. We're here to help other people, and other people are going to in turn help us.
Yeah.
You know, we're all here together. You know, it's, you know, that's why whenever I hear about, you know, crazy, you know, political stuff and racism and the whole thing, I don't get it.
Yep,
same. I've never understood why someone's language or the color of their skin matters. It's like, we're all trying to get to tomorrow. You know, why are we fighting about it? Where's the fight? Where's the argument?
Yeah.
We're all human. You know, can we hate something else? You know, let's hate fish. I don't know. Yeah, you know, let's hate oak trees. Yeah, we don't have to hate each other. But when it comes to callings and all that, if my thing is to help other people, I'm fine with that. As long as other people try to help me from time to time, because I certainly don't have life figured out.
That's cool. I love that. You got three movies you've made, and I watched all three of them this week. I've already watched the first two before, Fat to Documentary 2, and just this week I watched Beyond Impossible, which is really good. And you go into depth about saturated fats and cholesterol in the first two movies. My mum is still scared of butter today, and I've shown her the first film. Is there anything you could say to people who are still have that fear around fat? Like, it's been pretty much shown that that science is quite not scientific.
Mrs. Marinovich, please do not be afraid of butter. You know, it's funny what we did. You know, I talked about that, yeah, in the first two documentaries. You know, we had this war on saturated fats. And did your mom listen to your podcast?
Oh, she'll listen to this one, yeah.
Okay, good. So I'm speaking to one person right now. The rest of you guys can go about your day. I'm speaking to Jason's mom. Okay, Mrs. Jason's mom. Here's the deal. There was a war on saturated fat that shouldn't have ever happened. We need saturated fat to live. Butter is actually very healthy for you. Conversely, margarine and fake butters are actually really bad for you. Because you may remember Mrs. Marinovich. Is she a Mrs.? She's still married?
Yeah, her name's Terry.
Terry, Mrs. Terry. Here's the thing. Trans fats are bad for you. So, yeah, there are some bad fats, the man-made fats, the trans fats. And usually if you're having non-butter or butter substitutes, you're getting trans fats. So stay away from those and eat real butter. To give you an example, Terry, I eat butter every single day of my life. I have no clogging of my arteries. I have a zero CAC score. I get checked once a year. I get the dye put in me and I do the whole thing. There's nothing going on where saturated fat and or cholesterol has done anything to my heart or my arteries. And I can say that about everyone. There is nothing bad about butter.
Yep. Yeah, the people at Weston A. Price endorse that message. Do you know about Weston A. Price, the dentist in the 30s who traveled the world?
Yeah. You know, look, I mean, they did incredible work. And it was all done without any political anything. And that's why that's so good. You know, I like when people, and, you know, I would like to be a little bit like Weston A. Price, where I just go, okay, I'm not trying to make money out of this. You know, I have to make a living. You know, of course, you mentioned movies in a book. I make a living. You know, I own a vitamin company and a few other companies. It's boring to talk about here, but I'm able to speak with complete autonomy. I don't make anything out of telling people to do this. It's a free podcast. Sure, you go on Amazon, you buy my book, or you go to Audible and you get my book. You have to pay for that, but, you know, nothing's free, right? But I'm not selling a diet. I'm not selling any kind of program. We kept the PDF free. We had a PDF that I kept up for free. We gave it away over 300,000 times before we put a nominal charge of $10 on it, because we had to, because I have so many people working for me now that I have to pay those people, and I was paying them out of my pocket. And I just didn't think it was fair that I don't mind doing something for free, but when you're doing something that's costing you tens of thousands of dollars per year, then you have to start looking at what you're doing. And I didn't want to become a 501(c) and all that. I didn't want to become a charity. So I just said, you know what? Let me just bring in enough money to cover what it costs to keep this stuff free. And so that's what we do.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, going back to Weston A. Price, I don't think he ever found one culture that was vegan. And there's a massive push for that today, but I feel like we've been, there's some sort of agenda there, because, and the term vegan's changed as well. It's gone from vegan to plant-based. And your film Beyond Impossible goes into the vegan burgers really well and what goes into making those. What's your thoughts there?
Well, let's go back to Weston A. Price. What year was he doing his research?
This is around the 1930s.
Okay. Around the 1930s is also the time when we started coming up with all of the different vitamins. Actually, we started a little before that, but we hadn't identified all 13 essential vitamins, right? And there's some essential irons and all that kind of stuff, but 13 essential vitamins. And so a vegan, you could say you were vegan before then, but the fact of the matter is, you couldn't be a healthy vegan. As a matter of fact, you can easily die of veganism if you didn't have exogenous vitamins that you can take. Now you can just walk in. I tell people now, you can kind of be a healthy vegan. You can't completely be healthy, but if you want to be a vegan, you have to take a lot of vitamin B12, all the B vitamins, when you're not getting enough with your vegan diet. You should be taking A and D. You should be taking all of them. You should be supplementing with iron and, you know, because a lot of them become anemic. You should be supplementing with all sorts of things just to maintain this, as I call it, this wacky way of eating. It's not even real. I mean, being a vegan is not even, you know, when Helen White came up with this, or Ellen, I said Helen, Ellen G. White came up with this in the late 1860s, people just laughed at it. It was like, well, you can't do that. You need animal protein. And when Weston A. Price was doing this, he couldn't find cultures being vegan because nobody was stupid enough to try that. It's stupidity. You know, you need animal protein. You know, we need the amino acids to live. We need the iron. We need it all, right? So that's why there was no veganism back then. Now, because we have exogenous vitamins and we have people crazy enough to try this, you know, you have vegan cultures. And I can tell you this, I know some of the bigger names in the vegan. I'm actually friends with some of these people. People think I hate vegans, but I really don't. I know some of these people, and I'm here to tell you, they're cheating vegans. They do eat some form of animal protein, and they all decide on which one they want to do. Some of them will eat eggs when no one's looking. Some will eat chicken when no one is looking. Some will eat red meat. I know this to be a fact. I've actually been with them, and I've never sold one of them out because it would just look, it would be bad. It would be, you know, just deleterious on my part to go and do something like that. So I don't, right? And it wouldn't change anything by me selling these people out, right?
Yeah.
It would just make the vegans hate me even more, which I'm not looking for. But yeah, the movie, the third movie, Beyond Impossible, we take a crazy look at what they're trying to do. You know, it's like they're trying to turn anything into a meat substitute. And they're telling you it can save the environment, which it's actually more harmful to the environment. And they tell you that it's healthier for you. And it's actually, when I looked at Beyond Meat and Impossible Burgers and all that kind of stuff, or Impossible Burgers and Beyond Meat, whatever the hell the names are, they were about as healthy as eating Oreo cookies. And I'm not trying to be funny.
The ultra processed.
Yeah, ultra processed. And by the way, an Oreo cookie is also vegan. So, you know, a vegan can sit around and eat Oreo cookies or eat the equivalent of that kind of taste similar to meat.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of vegan friends as well. And as long as you're happy with your lifestyle choices, it's just there's this massive push going. And I feel like people are being manipulated and tricked into it. Like there's a lot of those vegan documentaries, which I don't know if you can call them documentaries, maybe propaganda pieces. Like there's this one where they talk about an egg. And I think it was in your film where eggs are as bad as you are smoking.
Well, let's see. they use the egg a lot, but I think they were saying in What the Health, they actually had a hot dog bun with cigarettes, burning cigarettes in it. And they said, like, you know, eating a hot dog is like smoking cigarettes. They were almost right. Eating the bread on a hot dog is no good, but actually eating the meat of a hot dog, like hot dog meat is not the best meat in the world. I would wholeheartedly agree with vegans on that. But eating meat is not equivalent to smoking. Dr. Greger has said that eating even one egg per week will cause type 2 diabetes.
Oh,
that's yeah. just, I've asked every doctor I could, vegan and otherwise, and no one can stretch far enough to even squint and go, that's a possibility. Mm. They just, every, and I'm talking not just doctors that eat meat, vegan doctors have said to me, he shouldn't be saying that because there's no way to defend that. They're mad at him for saying that. You know, that's how crazy it is.
And what about on the opposite extreme? What do you think about carnivore? A lot of people seem to be finding their autoimmune issues disappear going carnivore.
I don't really have a problem with carnivore other than it's restrictive, right? Well, yeah, you know, look, when my buddy, I remember Sean Baker came to the house probably 2016, he showed up at my house one day and he had been doing it for 2 or 3 months at that point. And I was like, how do you feel? Just eating just meat and nothing else? And he's like, feel fine. I've lost some weight and my blood numbers have come into line and the whole thing. You know, people have been doing carnivore for a long time, a lot of people, but Sean made it popular on the internet by doing the 6-month experiment. Now he's kept that going now for years. To prove that you could just sit around and eat meat. I've played around with it just to see what it feels like to eat meat all the time. I did it where I just had eggs and meat. I had either, you know, beef or pork or chicken and chicken eggs. And it gets pretty restrictive after a minute, you know?
Yeah.
I like having different things. I eat a lot of fish. I eat some, you know, almost like the poster behind me. I eat a lot of fish, a lot of avocado, a lot of olives, a lot of cheese, you know, some nuts. I love high fat nuts. I add butter to food. Yeah, you know, I like the variety of that. Mm. Yeah, you get away from that variety and just eat meat. I mean, have you ever tried it, Jason?
Yeah, I've tried pretty much all the diets and it's good, but like you say, like for me, the best diet you can be on is one that's local and one that's seasonal. And that means all the foods that are available. Animal, fungi, plant. Like restrictions are great if you're trying to focus on a particular issue, but you can't live restricted your whole life. I don't feel that's possible. And I like how you say you got to put, was it life into living?
Yeah. Yeah, I had some woman the other day on, I want to say Instagram, she goes, that statement doesn't make any sense. It's like, yeah, it's not really supposed to make sense. And I explained that to her. She goes, but it's bad English. And I went, okay, got it. And, you know, she doesn't realize where I came from and how it started. My first weightlifting coach ever when I was a kid had a business card. And it said, put life into living. And I just took that and I add, and do it with enthusiasm.
Yeah,
you know, we say it at the end of every podcast, and I really mean that. You know, people say, "Well, what happens when I get my blood numbers in check when I'm not type 2 diabetic anymore, and when my A1Cs are below 5? And can I ever have ice cream?" Yeah, knock yourself out. You want some ice cream on a Saturday night? Knock yourself out. If it becomes a problem and Saturday becomes Sunday and Sunday becomes Monday, crack it back. Just put a hold on it. Maybe don't eat it for a while. Get it out of your system, right? And then, you know, weekend comes, you want to have a margarita with friends? Knock yourself out, but not Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, because let's remember, there's 7 days in a week. If you do that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you're well over 40% of your week of drinking alcohol. So you have to look at things like that, right? What you're doing on a daily basis versus what you might do once in a while.
Yeah, also like when you say it doesn't matter what you eat between Christmas and New Year's Day, it matters what you eat between New Year's Day and Christmas. That's a great reframing of where your focus and attention should be.
You really pay attention way too close.
Like I said, 10 years I've been listening to you, bro.
Yeah. I may be in the Urban Dictionary for that one too. I've always said no one's gotten fat from what they eat between Christmas and New Year's. We get fat because of what we eat between New Year's and Christmas, right? So you visit family and your mom made the special Christmas, whatever, you know, your auntie made this. Enjoy a piece. That's why you do that. It's love, it's food. It's not on your program, but why not? I mean, it's there. Someone made it with love and it's delicious and you're going to enjoy it. That's the way you want to do it.
Where do I want to go to from here? Oh, food labeling tricks. It was the first time I heard it was from you and Anna talking about how in the States, I'm not sure if it's the same here, but they cut olive oil with different oils, other oils, seed oils, vegetable oils. So do you want to talk to that? Is that still a practice there?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's not going away. You got to remember the food lobby is right up there with the drug lobby and the gun lobby in the United States, the three biggest lobbies. And that's why we get drugs pushed through. And you go, how did the FDA approve that? You know, these lobbyists go in, these senators are getting paid off, these representatives are getting paid off, and they'll just push whatever they want to push through because money wins, right? And the same goes with food. I don't know how, this probably took years to get there, but you mentioned oil. So in the United States, you can cut olive oil up to 40%. So it's only 60% real olive oil. The rest of it could be any kind of crappy seed oil. And of course, when you cut it up to 40%, obviously it's not going to taste like olive oil anymore. So now you have to add back this kind of perfume to it to give it an olive oil smell. And then you have to add color to it to give it that kind of greenish golden olive oil look. So it can look good in the bottle. So you're bastardizing a food, olive oil, which is very healthy for you. You're now bastardizing it into just something crazy. 40%. And on the label, it can say 100% pure virgin olive oil.
Really?
Yeah. 60% of the olive oil in there is that. The other 40% might as well become, you know, sewing machine oil. Mm. You know, it's really that kind of crappy. So we have that, but you mentioned food labeling. That's even worse.
Okay.
I can make an argument that food labeling is even worse. I mean, you could put anything on the front of a package. You know, you can say it's vegan. You can say it's keto. You can say, you could take a bowl of sugar and wrap it up and stamp certified keto on it. Why? Because that's just two words, certified and keto. Yeah. There's nobody certifying keto. As a matter of fact, there's a group certifying keto, but they're not government mandated. It's just a group that says, hey, we certify keto. Mm. Pay us a certain amount of money and you can put certified keto on your product. That's all that is, right? So you can say whatever you want on the front of the package. You can say heart healthy, and you could pay a few bucks to the American Heart Association, the AHA, and they will let you put the little heart on the front. I don't know if you guys have that over in New Zealand.
We used to have this heart foundation check, but that's gone. Now we have like a star system, which is still wrong.
Yeah, they keep changing what it is. They just keep moving. It's kind of like a boxer in the ring. It's not just about hitting the other guy. It's about hitting and then moving, hitting and then moving. And so there's all kinds of tricks they use on the front of packaging. And then when you turn the package over, there's a grid, and on the grid, it says on the top, nutrition facts. And it'll tell you how much carbohydrates, how much protein, how much this, how much that. Even though it says nutrition facts, they're not exactly facts because there's a plus or minus in there. So companies know how to jimmy those numbers. So there's nothing factual about nutrition facts. The only time there's truth in anything on that packaging is the FDA says you must actually tell people what they are consuming in this package, right? So they put that under ingredients.
Yes.
And they make them put it in the order in which it exists. So let's say the package has you know, mostly, you know, rice in it, rice bran. That'll be number one. And maybe number two would be protein, and number three would be sugar. And then they start hiding sugar in there too.
Yeah.
Right? Because the FDA says, okay, you can have a plus or minus 2%. Wrong, right? So instead of just putting sugar in there once, they'll put it like six or seven times under different names with a plus or minus 2%. So you can have upwards of 10, 12, 15 grams of sugar and still list it as zero sugar.
Wow.
Over nutrition facts.
So pure ingredient.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's per ingredient. So there are ways, but you can read through that list and you can go, okay, that's at least 2%. Now it's 4%. Now it's 6 because it's a plus or minus 2. So you can actually, you have to really be savvy. And I get it. I'm in the game, right? I do this. This is my job. So I know what they're doing. Mm. They hate that I know what they're doing. And they hate that I have a podcast that, you know, millions of people listen to that hear what I'm doing, but they don't really care because they just keep doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. I think there's like over 70 names for sugar, right? It's crazy.
At last count, I just did a video today, right before this. And on my list over on my thing, I have 52 of the names of all, they're all real sugar. But when you start adding up like erythritol and all that, they're way over 70 now.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's kind of nuts.
Crazy. So if we move into being a sugar burner to a fat burner, is that the same as saying you're moving from being in a state of, well, I'm not going to say glycolysis. There's no such state as that, but sugar burner, and then ketosis. So when you're, you know, burning sugar versus burning fat, do you want to go into that and share the difference there?
Yeah. I started saying, you know, years ago, that you want to become adapted, fat adapted, right?
Adapted, yeah.
So what happens is we're so used to burning sugar that our brain has gotten lazy, right? Your brain goes, oh, I got some sugar. I'm just going to burn this. It's easy. I don't have to worry about converting anything else. So our brains can easily live on sugar. And science will tell you your brain prefers sugar. Well, it prefers sugar because it's easy to get. It's low-hanging fruit,
right.
Pun intended, right? So once you cut all the sugar out, your brain is starving. It's like, wait, what happened to the sugar, right? So you could go through a period of a day or two where you might feel like you have the flu or something like that, but your body is crossing over and your body starts making more ketone bodies. And our brain can use ketone bodies exactly the same way it used to use sugar, right? The cool thing about ketones is that our brain prefers to use ketones and our brain operates better on ketones, right? It works so much better that they figured out years ago back in the 1930s that it was a cure for epilepsy.
That's right. Yeah.
Right? There was no drugs for epilepsy. It was just get off of all sugar. We've known sugars, you know, Otto Warburg back in the 1920s was the first to figure out, hey, people have cancer, take them away, take sugar away. Cancer, you know, has nothing to feed on. Cancer can die, right? We've learned this over and over and over again. Yet we just somehow keep conveniently forgetting it, which makes no sense to me.
Well, it makes sense if you follow the money.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't want you to know. No. So, yeah, our brains can cross over and use ketone, but I'm living on ketones right now. You know, look, you could get exercise physiologists in here, not me because I'm one, but a different one. And they'll say, it's crazy. These people can't exercise without eating sugar. Well, I woke up in dietary ketosis this morning. I worked all morning, right? I sat here and did videos all morning and did podcasts. I got up. I went to a gym. I got on a stair machine for 90 minutes, 90. And went at a pretty high pace. I was high zone 2 the entire time. Got off, dried off, and I sat to do this podcast. I didn't stop to eat or do anything else. I have water right here. I have a cup of coffee right here. And I haven't had anything to eat other than fat.
Yeah.
You know, well, hang on. This morning I had 2 eggs for breakfast. So I had a little protein in there. And I took some coconut oil. And I also have some of my ultra fat, which is more coconut oil. And that's all I've had. I'm in deep ketosis and not even considering having to eat right now.
Yeah.
Right. And as soon as I hang up with this podcast, I'm just going to refill my water and my coffee because I have another podcast right behind it.
Yeah.
And when I'm done with that, I have another one right behind that at 6:30. And then I have a break and I start another one at 10 o'clock tonight. How is it a 60-year-old guy can work out the way I worked out today and not eat any sugar? And I'm starting my last podcast at 10 p.m. That'll probably end at 11:15. By the time I upload it, it'll be midnight, right? You know, most people say you can't do that. You need sugar to survive.
Yeah.
No sugar here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same way. You know, there'll be times where I'll indulge and go off my plan, but there was a time with Raglan where I woke up, went to the gym. I just had my normal salt water, went to the gym, did some sprints on the spin bike, and then had coffee, and then it was unplanned, but we climbed up, we hiked up Mount Karioi here, and that's a 90-minute hike up, 90-minute hike down. I mean, it took a lot of effort because it wasn't expected, and my legs were still a bit exhausted from the sprints, and then I ate for the first time that day at about 7, and that's because of, you know, my body's fat adapted, as you say.
Yeah.
I wasn't dependent on sugar, and it's a great feeling because you feel like you can last. There's no fear of where am I going to find food. There's just energy there without you even having to think about it.
Yeah, look, a guy like you or me, we could get lost in a mountain for a couple of days as long as we could keep getting water.
Yes.
Our body is fat adapted. We'll just start living off of the fat on our body, right? Probably we'll, you know, at some point, you know, autophagy will take over and we'll start using up some of our muscle protein and what have you. That's just normal. But, you know, we'll be fine for a long time if we had to. And most people can't do that. I mean, think about the number of times you're in the car with a friend. And they go, I'm starving. Yeah, I'm with friends. Oh, and we got to stop and eat. It's like, they'll see an exit. Pull over. I need to get something to eat. I'm starving. I'm ravenous. And it's like, I haven't had that feeling in 16 years since I started eating this way. Right? It's like I've forgotten what that's like.
Yeah. True. When people go on the ketogenic diet, they've heard this: when you go keto, you lose weight. But that's not necessarily the case because they may be eating a bit too much fat. Do you want to go into that, why it's not automatically weight loss?
Yeah, you know, at first I tell people eat, you know, because they're operating without a net. So at first I'll say, look, overeat fat, you know, overeat protein, whatever, just to get yourself off of sugar. And they'll notice they're losing weight like that, even though they're overeating something. But then they'll get to what they call a plateau. I hate the term plateau. Mm-hmm. But they'll say, hey, they'll call me. You know, I have these phone calls and people will call me and I'll go, hey, I'm not losing weight the way I was losing weight. I don't know what's going on. I need some help here. What's happening? And I'll say, now is time that you cut back on some of the extra food you were eating, right? Yeah, there's nothing you can do with impunity if you overeat fat. And I always tell them, notice you're overeating fat, but you're not getting fat. You're just not losing any more fat. Now we have to get you to where you're losing fat again, right? We need you to burn some of your internal stores before you start eating junk again.
Yeah. Two of your sayings I like in this revolves around exercise and movement. You say exercise is a poor way to lose weight. And I've also heard you say you cannot outrun a bad diet. But then, you know, you also say exercise is the fountain of youth. So what are you saying there, Vinny?
I have no idea what I'm saying. So, you know, people, I'm famously known for taking, you know, people in wheelchairs that are immobile, taking, you know, hundreds of pounds off of them, right? So, you know, it's like, wait a minute, you got these people, they're sitting all day, they can't move, they're stuck in wheelchairs, right? Paraplegics, quadriplegics. So I'll say, yeah, because we don't lose weight exercising. Exercise is a poor way to lose weight. And I've had a lot of people lose 100, you know, they've proven it to themselves. They lost 100, 150, 200 pounds, and even more doing that. And they'll say, yeah, I lost all the weight and I can still be a lazy fuck. And they'll say, so why should I exercise? And it's like, well, because exercise is the fountain of youth. right? We're a use it or lose it proposition. You want to, you know, every longevity study, I don't care who's doing it, shows that doing exercise is, you know, the main culprit in longevity. So if you want to live a long time and you want to be healthy for a long time, do exercise. Now, I will also say this, that if you're doing everything else correctly, exercise may magnify weight loss. Not will, it may, right? So if you're eating low carb and you're doing everything right and you're fat adapted and you're exercising, now you have some, you're going to magnify. There's going to be a magnification of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And the other saying, which other saying of mine? Oh, you cannot run a bad diet. You cannot run the fork. Yeah, because it's along the same lines. I've seen people, I've trained people to run marathons and they got to the starting line heavier than when we started training 20 weeks earlier. And towards the end, I had them doing 55, 60 mile a week, you know, running. And these people weren't losing weight. They were gaining weight and they couldn't figure out why. And it's because when you start running, you do all that, you go to a running store and there's the wall. I call it the wall of shame or the wall of sugar.
Right.
You know, all of this stuff, everything from Sports Aid to Gatorade to goo to power bars and candy bars that are, you know, masquerading as protein and health food bars.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. When you look at a lineup at a marathon, some of those people don't look as fit or as tight as sprinters. And some of them look, there's a saying, thin on the outside, fat on the inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really sad. You know, I brought a friend with me one time to an ultra cycling event and to crew for me. And it was the first time for him crewing. And he said, you're the only guy. That's not what he said. I'm saying that. He said, you're only one of the few guys that actually look like you trained to be in this event. And he said, if you had told me that I was at a plumber's convention, I would have believed that too, right? Because all these people who are capable of riding a bike for 36 and 40 hours nonstop, a lot of them have extra fat on them, right? Because they're eating sugar on the bike the entire time. Now, these people aren't morbidly obese, but, you know, they have dimply skin and they have cellulite, they have a little gut on them and the whole thing. And it's all because, you know, they're not out running the bad diet. Yeah. And they think that guys like me are genetically, you know, you have flat abs and you have all the striations in your muscles and because you're genetically different. Right. No, I'm not genetically different. Go look at my brothers. Go look at my parents, right? I don't come from anything other than a weird peasant stock of Italians.
They need to read Professor Tib Noakes' book on,
Yeah.
Because he's changed his tune on sugar and running.
He did. And in Lure of Running, I had Tim on again recently. And we talk about it every time he comes on. You know, when he figured out the truth, that's what I love about Timmy. When he figures things out, and by the way, he's probably done more studies on athletes, you know, sports nutrition and sports science than any other doctor on the planet. And it's just amazing that he was able to go, you know what, tear this section out of my book. I'm rewriting this book. This information, it never worked. I understand it now. Here's the truth. It takes a lot for a man to do that.
Yeah, it does. You also say your good intentions have been stolen and I'm here to help you get them back. And I think that's what you've been doing this entire time with all the work that you've been doing.
Yeah.
And that's because we have been lied to. And I don't know how long it's going to take for everyone else to wake up, but I guess that's what you and me are trying to do. We're doing our best to wake up the masses to the not so true facts out there.
Yeah, look, I always say, if I can help one person, I've done my job, right? I don't think it's going to ever change in my lifetime. I'm 60 years old. You look like you're half my age. I don't think it's going to change in your time either.
I wish, yeah.
We're going to keep going down this really bad path. I'm just hoping at some point they'll look back and go, these guys really started something and someone else is going to have to take over at some point.
Yeah.
Because at some point I'm going to have to retire and just kind of go away. Yeah. And I just hope someone else picks it up and keeps going with it.
I mean, I've seen, it's amazing, it's a miracle, but there's people in my family that have been listening to me over the years, and they've made some changes. Have you found that for you too, in your family?
Yeah, it takes forever. You know, one of my brothers, well, two of them kind of pay attention. My parents, they never really paid attention. My parents are still around. They never really paid attention until the pandemic. And I went home to take care of my mom. She fell and got hurt. You know, she broke two bones. And they wanted to put her in one of those facilities. And I said, no way. So I moved home for 7 weeks. It was the only time I moved back home since I left when I was 18 to go to school. And they had to eat what I was feeding them. So I was feeding them fish and red meat every night. And I bought good, healthy, high-fat yogurts and butter. They had margarine in their fridge and whole thing, which means they had never listened to me. There was some cereal, but I guess they got lazy in the morning. They didn't want to make bacon and eggs every morning. So now they were eating what I was eating because I wasn't going to cook two different meals. And my mom and my dad started losing a lot of weight. And my mom, when I left, she kept it going, right, after 7 weeks. And my mom went back down to, she's 84 years old. She went back down to her high school weight. Pretty amazing.
Wow, yeah. That's a cool story. Well, thanks for coming on, Vinny. It's been a blessing to have you on, sharing your knowledge. Where can people find you? What's the best place for them to go to look at more of your work and your books and movies?
If you just drop my name in the Google machine, Vinny Tortorich, I know that doesn't roll off the tongue, Tortorich. You'll see the podcast. You'll see, you know, if you get to VinnyTortorich.com, you'll see the book, the podcast, all the movies, all three of the movies are there. I'm starting to do more on YouTube now because people wanted me to do stuff on YouTube. So I'm starting to ramp that up a bit. I'm working on a fourth movie right now. I'm not talking about it yet, but great. There's a fourth documentary coming. Yeah. So you can, I'm easily found, and I will answer your questions on Twitter every night and also Instagram.
Awesome. Well, cheers, brother, for coming on. Keep doing the work you do. I know you're an atheist, but you're doing the Lord's work.
Well, I appreciate it, Jason, and thank you for having me on.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Thank you once again, Vinny, for coming on the show. I really enjoyed that conversation. It was a blessing to have you on after listening to you for so long. It's great to share more of your knowledge and your work with friends and family and people in my community. If you haven't heard of Vinny and Anna's podcast, Fitness Confidential, I highly recommend it. I've learned so much over the past 10 years, and you will learn a new way, a better way, a simpler way of eating and moving and just being true to yourself in this world. It's really great information. And also look up Vinny's website for his documentaries and his book. It's V-I-N-N-I-E, not with the wimpy Y, make sure of that, Tortorich.com. Vinny Tortorich.com. And if you would like more local resources, you can look me up at gijason.com. I'm here to serve. If you would like some holistic lifestyle coaching, I will teach you a 7 holistic lifestyle principle framework that will help you see different aspects of your life where you may be out of balance, and I'll be there to support you in your role and helping you choose your own path to balancing all those different areas and making you more whole and complete and healthy. And that's it from me. So until next time, stay free, be yourself, know that you are loved, and that you are love. Kia kaha.